interrupting the current neo-Euclideal climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode PTWRLM 649. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed. We're not going to get much out of the government, I don't think, relative to being free from being debt slaves until we start deciding to do it ourselves. U.S. Treasury unveils draft design of coin with Trump's profile. The agency is considering using the incumbent president's image to commemorate the 250 years of America's independence. How about non-dependence? Independence. The United States Treasury Department is considering putting an image of U.S. President Donald Trump on a $1 coin marking the 250th anniversary of America's independence. We're just so independent, folks. According to the first design draft revealed on Friday, the coin features Trump's profile on one side and along with the words Liberty and In God We Trust and the date 1776 to 2026. The other side shows Trump raising a clenched fist against a backdrop of the U.S. flag with the inscriptions Fight, 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 United States of America, and E Pluribus Unum. The image is a clear homage to the photo taken by AP's Evan Vucci shortly after Trump's failed assassination attempt in July 2024, which was widely republished in U.S. and international media. Quote, despite the radical left's forced shutdown of our government, the facts are clear. The United States, under the historic leadership of President Donald J. Trump, our nation is entering its 250th anniversary stronger, more prosperous, and better than ever before, a Treasury Department spokesperson said in a statement. Quote, while a final $1 coin design has not yet been selected to commemorate the United States semi-quincentennial, this first draft reflects the enduring spirit our country and democracy, even in the face of immense obstacles, the spokesperson added. But this is a Trump coin, the fiat president, no sound money, fake as gold plate, golden, not gold, and gaudy, just like the White House, and which is their golden sconce accoutrements, were noticed with mixed reviews. Eric Duarte posted, just in, the White House has released new footage of the current Trump Oval Office, and liberals are furious that there's too much gold. It actually looks quite stunning. To which Kacper Pointer Kaminsky posted, he won't stop until it's Versailles. Google French Revolution next. To which I responded, but this one works. Meaning, I assume that Versailles and not the White House is what she was speaking about. To which she responded, it's beautiful, somehow tasty despite the excess. To which I returned about Versailles and opposite the White House, aesthetic, class, and elegance. Thanks. Now, I guess we can debate whether or not we got our signals crossed on that interaction. From the Department of Official Hallucinations report, DeWaw cut filing $290,000 of government report with AI errors. Not the gold standard, I can tell you. The accounting giant has agreed to partially refund Australia's Labor Department for hallucinations in its product. The Australian arm of UK Big Four accounting firm DeWaw has agreed to partially refund the cost of the report it produced for the government in Canberra after the document was found to contain multiple AI-generated factual errors, the Australian Financial Review reported on Sunday. It sounds like the report wasn't a mere accounting of the state of labor or for the state finances, but trying to justify policy, maybe cover for fraud. Otherwise, it wouldn't need outside reference to expert or authoritas to try to justify a policy or cover up something. And although it's seemingly honorable to return the last payment, or part of it anyway, why would the company return partial payment when it ostensibly produced the report the government paid for, finally? So what's still wrong with that report? The Department of Employment and Workplace Relations quietly replaced the original report which was published in July, with the revised 237-page version last Friday, just ahead of a long weekend. Officials initially said the update added new information and corrected, quote, some footnotes and references. Sydney University academic Chris Rouge had earlier flagged numerous apparent hallucinations, typical of large language models, prompting DOWA to launch an internal review in August. The updated reports include a new disclosure confirming that AI, specifically Microsoft Azure OpenAI ChatGPT 4.0 model, had been used in its preparation. It also corrects over a dozen errors, including references to a non-existent court ruling and academic papers, as well as a fabricated quote attributed to Justice Jennifer Davies, misspelled Davis, in the first version. The deputy president of the Australian Competition Tribunal, Rudge, told the Financial Review that Dolwa's admission transformed what was previously, quote, a strong hypothesis into certainty, even if its confession was buried in the methodology section. A DEWR spokesman confirmed that DOWA had agreed to repay the final installment under its contract, though the amount was not disclosed. The full study on the computerized application of automated penalties in Australia's welfare system cost $440,000 Australian dollars, or $290,000 USD. Well, maybe that's where the cover-up is, justifying state theft through penalties. Rouge, a welfare expert, reportedly first noticed something that was amiss when the report cited a book supposedly written by his Sydney University colleague Lisa Burton Crawford. The title seemed outside of her field of expertise and turned out to not exist at all. Now, what if that was your official Department of Hallucination Social Credit report? What if you don't know the source reference was not within the field of study of the expert to give you the heads up that maybe that source didn't exist and was a fraudulent entry? And then who are you going to contact? The same AI hallucination they've programmed to lie to protect itself and the death care company? Or are we then also leashed to indeterminate amounts of time fact-checking the health insurer's hallucinatory ARL pronations protected by the government? Let's attach that to your digital token citizen dinghy, Siberian Gulag Department of Official Hallucination Health Report they just denied care for. Are you going to die before finding out the report that denied life-saving care pursuant to and enforcing the hospital insurance industry lobbyist manipulated Obama scare continued by Trump and the GOP is fraudulent? And then, when you are dead, who are you going to call? Hallucination reports indeed embraced by the government. Is this really the future you want? Or is this the future that they want? And with Trump's help, just as Trump helps and funds genocide. TrumpRx.gov, indeed. Where do you think that this is going when you contact the government directly for your private prescriptions just to get that discount? Why is this sort of deception needed? Just provide a discounted medication to everyone from any source, like maybe from Kanukistan. Just increase competition. And absent that free market idea, which coincidentally Trump can't put his name on, sounds like the same tactic as discounting the COVID jab bioweapons to get buy-in and chained up and free nasal swabs with every new account, remember? So convenient, cheap, safe, and effective to protect the rest of the herd. And to get the plantation cattle to wander into the paddock to be locked down for their safety. In accounting for hallucinating authority, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has adopted recommendations by a new group of vaccine advisors and stopped recommending COVID-19 shots for anyone, leaving the choice up to patients. The government health agency on Monday announced it has adopted recommendations made last month by advisors picked by U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. before this year, U.S. health officials following recommendations by infectious disease experts recommend annual COVID-19 boosters for all Americans aged 6 months and older, but Kennedy, who was questioned the safety of COVID-19 vaccines, abruptly announced in May that COVID-19 vaccines were no longer recommended for healthy children and pregnant women. But it's probably worth it to get those sickly people to take something that attaches onto their comorbidities to kill them and harm them quicker. He also dismissed the CDC's advisory committee. Remember what I've talked about, these advisory committees, on immunization practices, and replaced them with a hand-picked group. The new group voted last month to say all Americans should make their own decisions. Did this group actually have authority to deny Americans making their own decisions? That decision is protected in local communicable disease law, and that state law prevails against federal law, being health matters are reserved to the state. So, did they have any authority? And then as an advisory council to an agency? But the CDC also says vaccine decisions, especially for seniors, should involve checking with a doctor, nurse, or pharmacist. You think? But your pharmacist? And a nurse? On such important matters? And then we saw what happened during the Great COVID Swindle? I say, go back to your local communicable disease law and take control of your life instead of handing it over to somebody who was either in on the bribe, on the take, or was completely ignorant of that fact, as I'm still seeing today, so many years later, despite my efforts to inform and educate people. The recommendation was endorsed by Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services Jim O'Neill, who is serving as the CDC's acting director. O'Neill signed off on it last week, but HHS officials announced it Monday. The panel also urged the CDC to adopt stronger language around claims of vaccine risks, despite pushback from outside medical groups who said these shots had a proven safety record from the billions of doses administered worldwide. In a statement Monday, O'Neill celebrated the change, saying past guidance, quote, deterred healthcare providers from talking about the risks and benefits of vaccination. Informed consent is back, O'Neill said in a statement some doctors objected to, pointing out that informed consent never went away. Oh, no kidding. But informed consent to what? That it was a bioweapon? So you're not getting informed consent. Of course not. Major medical societies continue to recommend shots. No, they're not vaccines right there, are they? No, shots for younger children, pregnant women, and others at higher risk of severe illness. They say the Trump administration discussion of risk overemphasizes rare side effects and doesn't account for the dangers of coronavirus infection itself. Doesn't account for the dangers of the common cold infection, right? And that's a problem how? Means you have to take your safety and your effectiveness into your own hands and not hand them to somebody else. And for Trump's official safety, or at least legally plausibly so, classified legal opinion justifies U.S. strikes against drug cartels. Did someone say deja vu yet? Back to Obama? The report follows a series of American attacks on boats claimed to have been carrying narcotics off the Venezuelan coast. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has produced a top secret legal opinion authorizing the use of force against a list of drug cartels going beyond those officially designated by Washington as terrorist groups. So I'm going to agree with the existence of such a report on its face there, because Trump is no different than Obama finding some hacked ambulance chasing a Turner and Trump yes man to justify the unjustifiable, like Obama did to get his murder memo he needed to kill American citizens without due process, extrajudicially and extraterritorially, if you will remember, please. In recent weeks, the U.S. has sunk at least four boats, it claimed, were carrying narcotics off the coast of Venezuela, killing more than 20 people. And as I've said, that has no due process, and the claim needed to be proven. And then, even if they proved it, it wasn't a capital punishment. So I'm hoping that my listener has a problem with it claim, the United States claim. A unilateral claim, not objectively proven by evidence of the fact of the claim. As we found out, the first strike hit a boatload of fishermen, but no evidence to the contrary was provided by the United States, or that I have seen at all, nor was there evidence that even if correct, the act deserved more than the punishment that it would give for transporting, trafficking, which isn't capital punishment to my knowledge. The president of the oil-rich Latin American nation, Nicolas Maduro, has denied Washington's accusation and having links to drug trafficking and insists the attacks were part of an attempt to depose him. The previously unreported legal opinion by the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel is a cornerstone of the Trump administration's campaign against the cartels, which also includes an expansion of the CIA's powers to act in Latin America. Previously unsupported legal opinion here, again, is still an unsupported opinion, arguing to an echo chamber wall, not in a court of law. I really need you to go back and listen to what we were talking about or what you researched about the murder memo, what that did. I covered, I think, a couple of broadcasts for that. The document argues the U.S. president can authorize the use of deadly force against a wide range of drug trafficking groups due to them posing an imminent threat to the American people, the source said. Former Associate General Counsel at the Defense Department, Sarah Harrison, described the opinion and said if it is as broad as it seems, it would mean DOJ has interpreted the president to have such extraordinary powers that he alone can decide to prosecute a war far broader than what Congress authorized after the attacks of 9/11. By this logic, any small, medium, or big group that is trafficking drugs into the U.S., and I want you to keep track of that, remember, those boats they blew up already could not reach the U.S., could not even bring them close. Trafficking drugs into the U.S., the administration could claim it amounts to an attack against the United States and respond with lethal force, Harrison added. Again, could claim a unilateral, unsubstantiated claim, firstly, and as applied to the three prior reports of murder on the high seas, extrajudicial death from above by Trump and the U.S. government, none of the boats were headed to the United States to attack it, let alone posing an imminent threat to the American people or even a single American. But even if authorizable, how does it justify murdering fishermen or other lawful mariners, the first evidence of which now feeds the fishes like a godless gangster might prefer to hide the evidence, right? Osama, Muslim buried at sea, bin Laden? According to the broadcaster, multiple Pentagon military lawyers have suggested that the U.S. attacks on boats off Venezuela coast do not appear lawful. However, they lack the authority to overrule the opinion of the DOJ's Office of Legal Counsel. What happened to not executing an unlawful order there in the military, or an order making war on the laws of the United States under the pretense of authority, but without the substance of or the warrant in law? What about all that? The imminent threat to we the people doesn't appear to be some speeding boat on the high seas near Venezuela. The imminent threat appears to come from within the United States government itself. Now the money quote, we read on, quote, the way forward is just to eat it and put your head down and act in accordance with the Secretary of War Pete Hegseth's new policies, one of the lawyers said. A lawyer putting his head down and not calling out a policy. Fascinating. As I just said prior, some hack ambulance chaser at Turner and Trump yes man is whom the instigator in chief relies on, because that's not any law enforcement to have probable cause to believe a crime is being committed and not arrest that crime for adjudication, not summary judgment and execution. So, again, so much for Bar Association members and the defense of the law, truth, and justice in the American way. Not super, man. Woe unto you lawyers. Put your head down and grovel before His Majesty's henchmen. A lot of them need to resign and find themselves out on a small outcropping in the South China Sea, it seems to me. But run that article down and read it. Read it behind the woodshed years and years ago. Woe unto you, you lawyers. And I'll give you a link. You can go to the broadcaster, find it, read it yourself. Written by Fred Rodell, professor of law, Yale University. Written in 1939. The lead states, a Lutzy gutsy attack on the law as a curious, antiquated institution which, through outworn procedures, technical jargon, and queer mummery, enables a group of medicine men to dominate our social and political lives and our business to their own gain. For those of wanting to see the sort of devil Antichrist Trump, the reputed Messiah, as did Obama, the Peace Prize awarded drone king, relied on to legally justify the unjustifiable and to provide legal cover for the officer because he was in-house without judicial review, advise so. And I've warned you all about this and what the attorneys do to your local officials as well. Those officials will turn to that attorney, and that attorney will give them their advice relative to the policies that are coming down from on high, wherever that is, probably coming up from out of the depth of the stinking abyss. And those people that are in office, the elected officials, which come and go, largely will not act outside of that advice. And that's what the part of, I was telling you have to take a lot of work to educate and produce your proof. And you can't be wrong once when you do this, to educate a willing official as contrary to what they may be advised by the attorneys, the attorneys. And we've seen in our experience, almost everything can be misadvised. And they go in the direction of the agendas, relatively so. The numbers that we've been able to identify. And this is why those attorney advisors are so dangerous and the main obstacle to defeat when you work with a local official to get things done lawfully and correctly. So back to the article, the law not only is not an exact science, but cannot be an exact science, so long as it's based on abstract principles and deals with specific problems. Just as the devil can always cite scripture to his purpose, so can any lawyer on either side of any case always cite the law to his. But in this case, murder is an abstraction raining death from above upon innocent people to Trump's purpose. The legal license, not binding moral authority, but the legal license to murder, just cause. And how Trumpenstein commits genocide under the pretense of peace is just disgraceful. It's disgraceful. Disgraceful. Despicable what's going on in front of us. And the cruelty with which the great peacemaker justifies his extrajudicial murderous nature because some attorney said he could. U.S. strikes on Venezuelan boats are an act of kindness, he says. The president argued that the operation saved lives by stopping the flow of drugs into the country. This guy's just omniscient, isn't he? All the drugs just stop now since he's been killing people in boats in international waters. Just stop. United States President Donald Trump has described the recent strikes on alleged drug cartel-operated vessels off Venezuela as an act of kindness, saying the operations helped save thousands of lives at home. Again, we're back to alleged. We're back to making a claim that's never validated, never proven. The U.S. has destroyed at least 4 boats in international waters since September as Trump continues to accuse Venezuela's left-wing government of using narco-terrorists to smuggle drugs into his country. Speaking at the U.S. Navy's 250th anniversary ceremony in Norfolk, Virginia on Sunday, Trump praised the military for supporting efforts, quote, to blow the cartel terrorists the hell out of the water. Alleged, again, we don't know who those people are. Quote, it's a pretty tough thing we've been doing, but you have to think of this way. Every one of those boats is responsible for the death of 25,000 American people and the destruction of families, he said. So when you think of it that way, what we are doing is actually an act of kindness. Is not an exemption to murdering in the Bible that I read. Trump said the strikes eliminated a key sea route used to traffic fentanyl and other drugs into the United States. Quote, nobody wants to go into the water anymore, he said. Well, wait a minute, I thought all this fentanyl was coming from China. Isn't that all that tariff nonsense it's all about? It's still not over. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has rejected the allegations of a running cartel, saying his government has eliminated all major trafficking networks and vanquished prominent gangs. He accused Washington of using the fight against cartels as a pretext to topple his government and seize Venezuela's natural resources. Now, I'm going through this a little bit and emphasizing these things as we move in to what just happened this week. He accused Washington of using the fight against cartels as a pretext. Right? So keep that track. And for what? Venezuela's natural resources. They also want control of the government. So if that unilateral act, contrary to law, and where no one asked him, is an act of kindness, what does Trump do if he really loves something? But okay, peacemaker extrajudicially and extraterritorially taking on the cartel mobster terrorists. Now do Satan Yehu. And another thing that won't help the peacemaker, considering sending missiles to escalate war and strike deep to cause chaos, despite the U.S. believing Tomahawks won't help Ukraine, the limited number of long-range missiles and sporadic strikes won't turn the tide of the conflict, the paper reported, citing officials written by FT. The U.S. officials believe that supplying Ukraine with Tomahawk long-range missiles would not significantly shift the battlefield in Kiev's favor, the Financial Times reported on Thursday. U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance announced that Washington was considering a Ukrainian request for Tomahawks, which have a range of 2,500 kilometers and cost an estimated $1.3 million each and could potentially reach Moscow and far beyond. Sources familiar with the matter confirmed the U.S. President Donald Trump is considering the idea. However, a U.S. official told the paper that some people inside Trump's inner circle believe Tomahawks are unlikely to change the battlefield situation. I don't think a limited number of Tomahawks or a sporadic deep strikes into Russia will change Vladimir Putin's mind. Separately, Washington is preparing to provide Ukraine with enhanced intelligence to guide long-range missile and drone strikes on Russia's energy infrastructure, a move described by the FT as an escalation and of U.S. support intended to help Kiev map Russian air defenses and plan strike routes. Ukraine has long conducted strikes deep into Russia, targeting energy facilities, critical infrastructure, and residential areas, sometimes with civilian casualties. No, a lot of times, actually. Russia has retaliated by attacking military-related infrastructure, insisting that it never targets civilians. On Thursday, Putin warned that supplying Ukraine with Tomahawks would represent a major escalation, notably because of it's impossible for Kiev to use the missiles without the direct participation of American military personnel. He further cautioned that the move would be detrimental to U.S. and Russia relations, which he said have shown potential for improvement in recent months. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov commented on reports of the U.S. plans to enhance gathering data supporting Kyiv, noting that Washington already transmits intelligence to Ukraine on a regular basis. The supply and use of entire infrastructure of NATO and the use to collect the transfer intelligence to Ukrainians is obvious, he said. And I wonder what a Turner Trump was advised by for this peaceful contribution. The point being, there's million-dollar missiles going to do nothing, and they're considering it. They're going to consider going ahead, wasting a ton of money for nothing. And it's going to escalate matters terribly. Also, Donald, the humanitarian peacemaker Trump, she's just a troublemaker. Trump on Thunberg's arrest in Israel. The U.S. president comments came after the activist was detained at sea and held in a high-security prison by the Jewish state after a second attempt to sail to Gaza. Now, you all know, if you get behind a woodshed for some length of time, my deep criticism for the young and highly impressionable and wrong Miss Greta Lynn, the little performer she is. But what does Trump have against delivering baby formula and medicine to Gaza that she alone is a troublemaker when doing something to ameliorate and bring awareness to the Zionist genocide? She's a troublemaker when intending to help stop genocide only means Trump, the man holding all the cards to stop genocide, does not intend to stop genocide. Or not until he gets his cut, whether financial, notoriety, or property resort by the sea to the river and Kushner Water Theme Park, or an unwarranted peace prize, maybe, for instance. Right, Barack Hussein, Drone King Obama? U.S. President Donald Trump has mocked activist Greta Thunberg for her second failed attempt to reach Gaza aboard an 8th flotilla, which led to her detention and deportation by Israeli authorities. Thunberg has joined over 400 activists in trying to sail to the blockaded enclave, only to be detained by Israel Navy on Friday. And that number, I forgot to talk about last episode, I think I missed it. It's actually almost 500 people that were interfered with in their obligation to right their duty to stop Israel from doing what it's doing. But little Miss Thunberg, only the most globally prominent, it was almost 500 people there abducted through piracy on the high sea, just like Trump in the Caribbean near Venezuela for those keeping score. 497, their boats hijacked, stolen, and the travelers abducted extrajudicially and extraterritorially. Sound familiar? Same unlawful game plan? Well, you bet. Absolutely. When they work, they keep up playing the same plan. When asked about the Swedish activist, Trump responded, "She's a troublemaker. She's no longer into the environment. Now she's into this. She needs to see a doctor. She has an anger management problem," he told journalists at the Oval Office on Monday. Now, my supported and sound criticism, little Miss Thunberg and her so-called environmental activism aside, well, because as you should know by now, climate change is not about the weather, and ecosystems are digital. And she may very well have some sort of genetic or cognitive disability. Who knows? But I don't think wanting to deliver baby formula to feed famished, starving babies or to stop genocide can be described as having a problem with anger management or to be so easily dismissed. Even the shooting daggers death stare that she gave Trump for ignoring her in that UN meeting years ago wouldn't be considered a problem with anger management. How dare you? Trump is angry and trying to save face because Missy Thunberg is the popular face of his failure and the other 496 supposed anger management challenge people don't matter, I guess. Nor that they, too, wanted to deliver baby formula to starving babies or to stop genocide, because Trump has failed his duty and obligation to stop the killing of innocents. If you'll buy what he's selling. Trump's statement as one of the psychopaths trying to deflect scrutiny for his dereliction, even his crimes. We have a direct evidence of that in March when he went and gave Israel more weapons to continue and escalate the genocide, now openly declared as such. On Saturday, fellow activists and lawyers claimed that Thunberg, along with others, were subjected to torture, which is in quotes, torture, and quote, harsh treatment, close quote, in an Israeli desert prison after their arrest. West Jerusalem rejected the claims, while National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said he was proud of the harsh conditions the activists were being held in. Now, the ultra-Zionist is proud of abusing a woman for trying to deliver the baby formula to feed the babies. Giver is elated to starve to death. Now, where is Trump to criticize that demonstrable anger management problem leading to mass murderer behavior? Trump is throwing the babies out with the baby formula. Right, First Lady? Save and bring peace to the children with a stroke of the pen, Melania? Trump also shows he has a serious discernment problem. And that is fatal to a Christian ethic and faith, the Protestant that he said he used to be, at least. And we might have another troublemaker for Trump. But this is the other question, what's going on in the world and geopolitics. Nobel Peace Prize has become Orwellian farce for Western elites. The Norwegian Nobel Committee announced that in Oslo on October 10th, that the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to Maria Corina Machado. Awarding the Nobel Peace Prize to Maria Corina Machado is another episode in the endless saga of globalist corruption of values, Professor Alfred de Uzias, former UN independent expert on international order and author, tells Sputnik. Quote, she is yet another U.S. lackey who advocates and supports more sanctions against Venezuela, although such unilateral coercive measures have already killed tens of thousands of innocent Venezuelans for lack of medicine, medical equipment, and nourishment, Isaiah says, comparing Machado to another U.S. proxy, Juan Guaido. Over the past 40 years, there's been a globalist takeover of institutions, including the Nobel Committee, Organizations for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, IAEA, International Criminal Court, and others, according to the pundit. Though that list of organizations is not a stranger to those of us behind the woodshed. Just look them up. It has become an Orwellian farce for Western elites. The Nobel Peace Prize exercise often reminds me of Orwell's 1984. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. Is that what they mean by the peace through strength? The peace through ignorance, I suppose. But on that point, how is it a political candidate that would be voted into office, a democracy then, be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for her efforts to promote democratic rights and a peaceful transition to democracy in Venezuela? A democracy that already exists. Is a United States narrative to suggest the current democracy doesn't exist, that the Nobel Prize Committee should have avoided but didn't, handing the prize to a longtime U.S.-supported politician accused of trying to overthrow a constitutional government elected by the Venezuelan people, way back as far back as Bush Jr. Mission accomplished. To overthrowing a democracy the Nobel Committee denies exists when saying Machado earned it because of her efforts to promote democratic rights and peaceful transition to democracy, and in doing so imposes upon the people of Venezuela that they do not have a right of self-determination by their constitution, or a self-determination free of outside influence, deception, or a democracy subject to a foreign nation, that it shall meet the U.S. moving goalposts, those self-serving rules-based order, despite the Venezuelan constitutional order validating the election of Maduro, just like the courts validated the election of Biden, despite the objections of Trump. Does not a peace prize make, not for Machado or Trump, It does predict, at least, continuing strife, if not war. And what have we been seeing in the waters near Venezuela and in the skies over Venezuela? Defense Department is the War Department. War is peace. The professor argues that the Nobel Peace Prize has no useful purpose and no credibility and should be abolished. Quote, prize awards are spectacles for the organizers and the laureates are seldom the best, DeZayas remarks. Quote, this applies not only to the Nobel Prize, but also to the Calasprias and the Pulitzer Prize. It's all political. And just as I pointed out about the extrajudicial, extraterritorial U.S. citizen murdering by death from above drone bomber 2010, and subsequently, the fact that Barack Obama, who has been responsible for multiple military interventions, or the EU, which is an unaccountable political body with self-serving and distinct political aims, have been awarded the prize while undoubted pacifists and compassionate figures like Mahatma Gandhi did not, is proof enough that the prize award is often a political, not a merit-based decision, says Beck. Many view Mercado as the U.S. next proxy in Venezuela after her predecessor, Juan Guaido, failed a coup d'etat attempt in Caracas and lost the support of his opposition allies in 2023. Well, candidates are nominated and chosen by committees which consist of public figures, notables, and other politicians, or high-profile figures who desperately want it. To pretend that these people are not motivated, at least in part, by political views or and influenced by political pressure is totally unrealistic, Beck concludes. So it seems to me the Nobel Political Peace Prize goes to the object of the desires or interests of the United States. That while it has been the Trump, me want peace prize, no, not me behind which, the peace faker in chief, the guy whose action after January 31st of this year can't count toward consideration for the prize this year. The political peace of Dunn Nobel Prize Committee rewards what appears to be a long-supported agent of the United States in furtherance of its future actions, which would predict support for anything the U.S. agent has said, which would be culminating in a military action against Venezuela because the prior U.S. coup d'etats failed. But what is going to be the deal Trump accepts from the liberal to help her, or is he going to push her aside as irrelevant, given the real prize is not stopping what the CIA relies on, the drugs, but what the CIA has planned? Or does Trump kick them both to the curb and just make respectful, peaceful deal with Maduro and get on with his day? And to that, I'm going to have to say Trump just rejected an offer by Maduro to work with the mineral resources of that nation and the United States. So, or is this all going to be, as the professor recalls, the consequence from the documentary, War is Peace, Freedom is Slavery, Ignorance is Strength? Trump doesn't have the Peace Prize race to clean up for outwardly now, at least half a year again, till later next year. He also doesn't have to engage the pretense or the cover for ongoing Venezuela war maneuvers under the pretext of the United States instigated war of drugs, of which this is much more evidence of agency-sponsored drug trafficking. We could ask Gary Webb. Oh, wait. Gary Webb was suicided December 10, 2004, with two gunshot wounds to the head for exposing this fact. And in fact, Trump will take credit for saving Americans from Venezuela drugs and bringing peace to the Venezuelan people once Trump makes war on them, removing the democratically elected Maduro, attacking and subduing the people that don't agree for Venezuela's resources and geopolitical foothold. Which, as I think about it, sounds like the Ukraine. And any other place like Iraq, Syria, Libya, and Gaddafi, and others. The United States brings peace through strength. by its War Department. And relative to the connection also that goes through the Nobel laureate now through to Israel, she asked Israel for help to throw Maduro out. Now we get the connection that what may be actually going on here relative to this war in Gaza and what Trump's peace deal there was as he was, it was being promoted. He was working toward this peace prize, which he couldn't. Again, anything past January 31st was not on the table for this year. And so all that was just a big promotion carried on and on and on and on by Trump, making a big deal for nothing, actually. But he's made this deal, this 20-point plan, ceasefire, so-called. Yeah, we had a little bit of question last week. It's starting to be cleared up this week a little bit. The top officials from Hamas announced an end to the Gaza war. The organizations have received guarantees from the United States that the hostilities will not continue, Khalil Al-Hayya has said. The Gaza war is over, a senior Hamas official, Khalil Al-Hayya, said, adding that the peace plan put forth by U.S. President Donald Trump would mark the start of a permanent ceasefire. The militant group received some guarantees from Washington and other mediators that the hostilities would not continue, he told Gaza residents in a televised address on Thursday. According to Al-Hayya, the Gaza-based Palestinian militant group dealt responsibly with the American president's plan and submitted a response aimed at preventing further bloodshed. He did not elaborate on the nature of the response, but said that the deal, which was reached in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, included providing the Palestinian enclave with humanitarian aid, opening the Rafah border crossing, and exchanging prisoners. His words came as the Israeli cabinet was still voting on ratification of the agreement. National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said ahead of the vote that he and his party would oppose Trump's peace plan and would leave the government if Hamas is allowed to retain control over Gaza. He also described the release of Palestinian prisoners in exchange for Israeli hostages as an unbearable price to pay for the agreement. It sounds like quite an agreement, does it? Not much of an agreement there. And to the last point, Satan Yehu might sabotage Israeli-Hamas peace deal. On September 29, Trump unveiled a 20-point plan to resolve the Gaza conflict. The proposal calls, among other things, for an immediate ceasefire and the release of hostages within 72 hours. The plan also stipulates that Hamas and other factions must renounce their involvement in governing Gaza, which will be entrusted to a technocrat, apolitical Palestinian committee overseen by an international board headed by Trump. The risk of sabotage is always present, therefore we need a serious and decisive U.S. position. Washington's diplomatic weight is important to us for ensuring peace in the region, Fadah told Turkish broadcaster TRT Haber. So where it's reported last episode that Hamas would not accept technocratic governance, now, like all y'all in America are apparently, Hamas now agrees to international technocratic governance. It's the first definitive proof the international carnival mirror is a two-way mirror. Beyond that hitch in the geopolitical giddy-up for the Palestinian people, as reported last episode, this sets the stage for us that the Arab world is putting a lot on Trump, taking his word that the Palestinians have had enough. Whatever the ulterior motives are, the carnage will stop. This becomes a fine edge upon which the Arab world can act to retaliate against Israel if Trump fails. If only they would. Earlier on Saturday, an Israeli government source told Sputnik that Israel has been preparing to send a delegation of negotiators to discuss the details of implementing the first phase of Trump's plan to resolve the conflict in Gaza. The Egyptian Foreign Ministry then announced that Cairo would be hosting the Israeli-Hamas talks to discuss the release of hostages held in Gaza and Palestinian prisoners held in Israel. On Friday, Hamas said that it had agreed to hand over governance of the Gaza Strip to the Palestinian Committee based on a nationwide consensus. So, handing over governance of the Gaza Strip to a Palestinian committee based on a nationwide consensus sounds a wee bit different than agreeing to a globalist technocratic governance, don't it? Hamas also expressed its readiness to release all living Israeli hostages and hand over the bodies of the dead in accordance with Trump's plan, adding that the movement will participate in discussions on the future of Gaza Strip within the framework of the pan-Palestinian structure, and except Hamas is holding fast to the other cheek of their butt. Hamas will not surrender weapons until Palestinian National Army created. And rightfully so, where I question who was Trump to deny the Palestinians their right to defend themselves, their right to bear arms, in particular where he has the right to bear arms and should, if he really wanted to make America great again, instead of taking every opportunity to exploit it for himself, even if for name recognition, extend the right to bear arms to the Palestinians, if that was his to say. The Palestinian militant group Hamas on Sunday denied media reports suggesting it was ready to disarm immediately to implement U.S. President Donald Trump's ceasefire plan. Earlier in the day, several media outlets reported, citing anonymous sources, that the group had agreed to hand over its arsenal to a Palestinian-Egyptian body under international supervision and has informed the U.S. of its decision. However, Hamas was quick to deny the fabricated claims, stating its position is communicated only through official channels. Quote, what was published is baseless and aims to distort the position and confuse public opinion, the group said in a statement. Now, who is doing that, folks? Who wants to confuse public opinion? You got a little clue of that on TikTok, maybe? Perception management? Maybe. Hamas partially agreed to Trump's plan on Friday. Let me read that again. Hamas partially agreed to Trump's plan on Friday, signaling its readiness to hand over surviving Israeli hostages and bodies to the deceased, as well as to transfer the governance to Gaza and to a Palestinian body of independence. How do you have independence when you got such a worldwide inclusion? It's reported that Hamas took over 250 people hostage during its October 7, 2023 surprise attack, which is really, I think, a open-air prison escape, wasn't it? On the southern Israel, that left at least 1,200 people dead and triggered the subsequent Israeli military campaign to Gaza. It's a genocide. The group is believed to still hold about 50 hostages, of whom roughly half are thought to still be alive. And I would interject to clarify, just accepting the number for a purpose here, Hamas took around 250 people hostage during its October 7th surprise defensive attack against 78 years Zionist genocide. Imposed upon those people, the Palestinians, by the world. Why, none of the nations have an excuse here. They are the cause. While the group did not mention disarmament, a senior Hamas official, Moussa Abu Marzouk, further elaborated on the matter to Al Jazeera shortly afterward. The group will only hand over weapons to the coming Palestinian state, and whoever governs Gaza will have weapons in their hands, he said. So, as I reported last episode, Hamas agrees, but, and what a but, I love big B-U-T-S, don't you? And this is a big, beautiful butt. Bottom line, that butt has legs to keep and bear arms. Also remember, Hamas has the questionable motive of a Satan Yehu Mossad op pimping it out and needs to bring respect to the Palestinian people and remove the potential of its own potential subversion. Also, returning all the hostages eliminates one more excuse for Satan Yehu to continue to use his conflict, his lack of intention to peace, to save his political behind. So if the Palestinians can put together a non-globalist government better than the Palestinian Authority as well, then that would be a better repository for the power of the Palestinian defense and better than the question of Hamas and that Trump is imposing. And the Palestinians don't have to face any legitimate criticism that they won't disarm despite their right to be armed and for their self-defense. To that end, if Trump pulls his head out, stops his designs for Gaza Resort and Kushner Water Theme Park from the river to the sea, he can tell Netanyahu to go pound sand. It's over. And if you don't think so, out of an act of kindness, as we did for the World Against Venezuela Drug Scourge, we'll take you out of commission. And if you threaten or cause any retaliation, we'll deport and retire you to a small rock outcropping in the South China Sea, and we'll come get those nukes your predecessors stole from us that JFK wanted back to keep you all from becoming the rogue tyrant everyone knows that you is. Oh, and AIPAC and the other Israeli firsters have to register as agents of a foreign entity. Okay, I got a little creative license there. Foray into what ought to happen, if you please. A long vape of hopium, if you must, on some of that, or based upon his self-made claim that Trump is a genuine peacemaker. Can I get an amen? Cheer from the Palm Pomeranians. And now for its part, Israel ratifies. The question before is now solved, at least by the government, if not giver. Israel ratifies Gaza's ceasefire and hostage relief plan, but conspicuously no further. The country's government has approved an outline of the deal, which includes a partial IDF withdrawal from the enclave. Israel's government has ratified a plan for a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of all remaining hostages held by a Hamas militant. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office announced on Friday. The statement said that the Israeli cabinet had approved an outline of the deal and released all hostages, living and dead, without mentioning other aspects of the ceasefire plan. 48 Israeli hostages remain in Gaza, with only about 20 believed to be alive. As you see, the numbers just keep dwindling down, and I've also seen that Israel caused a lot of these as well. So I'm not going to go into all that. It's irrelevant to the point of what's happening on the ground right now. And I'm dismissive, I've said before, I'm dismissive of the United States-Israel side, because there's supposed to be a right of self-determination that's also being denied in this plan to the Palestinian people themselves. And Hamas, for as much culprits as they might be, or paid by Netanyahu, are now actually holding that line, which I find interesting. But I think that's, again, self-preservation at some point. The broader 20-point ceasefire framework calls for a phased but full Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, the disarmament of Hamas, and the establishment of a transitional international administration. So we can hear the dose of reality failure built into the plan. Disarming Hamas without establishing a military defense to protect Palestinians from an adversary that cannot be trusted to keep its agreements. The Israeli Defense Forces announced on social media that the ceasefire took effect at 12 p.m. local time, according to the statement, Israeli troops have withdrawn to the agreed positions within the enclave, though the military said its southern command remains in the area and will continue to remove any immediate threat. What threat? They aren't supposed to be there to be able to perceive any threat. Does not bode well for actual peace, or without the justice that we're seeing, which I haven't heard any mention of at all. Well, we get to do the peace, but we're not going to give any justice to the matter whatsoever. And from the Department of Making Appearances toward the Nobel Peace Prize for next year, Trump says he may go to Egypt soon for Gaza deal. Remember, all the hesitation here. It's like these deals that don't really happen, but we're going to take credit for them anyway. Quote, I was just given a note from the Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East, and they're going to need me pretty quickly, Trump said. He said he would probably go either before the hostages are released or shortly thereafter. Well, that clears up nothing, doesn't it? Trump ended his participation in the White House event by saying, quote, I have to go now to try and solve some problems in the Middle East. And this was all said before Israel ratified the agreement, and only to the point of the hostage release for Israel part. Now, will he do the photo op with Hamas leaders that agreed to the deal with the U.S. guarantees of protection? Like the 200 U.S. troops now going to be deployed to Israel? U.S. boots on the ground? That's not really encouraging. If Trump wants Netanyahu to back off, can he just stop supplying the weapons? Like he should have in March when he allowed Netanyahu to escalate the genocide? Remember all them 2,000-pound bombs that were going to go and be given to them just to keep destroying the Palestinian land and people. And someone else that we can't surrender to, a self-serving psychopath slammed Sweden. Don't fall for it over there. Bill Gates slams Sweden over increased military spending. The peacemaker he is. Scandinavians should instead be funneling funds into the global humanitarian initiatives the U.S. billionaire has set. Note, billionaire is the agent of death. And could it be said that he kills or maims more people through his humanitarian camouflage than all the wars ever waged, whether by jabs or bullets? This challenge from an apparent eugenicidal maniac is being used to promote death, either through a Gates-supported foundation or the state military itself, for yet another warmongering made-up bogeyman threat. Foreign Trade Minister Benjamin Dausa responded to Gates' criticism by defending the country's shift in priorities. If we don't want our children to speak Russian in the future, we need to have a very strong defense, he insisted, speaking to TT News Agency. Saying so without a shred of evidence against a nation that if Russia is an unprovoked adversary, Sweden wouldn't stand a chance if Russia were as warmongering as the Swedish Foreign Trade Minister terrorist suggests. A trade minister, no less. Who wouldn't want their son or daughters to speak another foreign language, or as many as they would want? That's a reason to prepare to go to war, one you won't likely win anyway? Or instead of challenging Gates for the eugenics-driven population reduction psychopath he appears to be, to say we don't need your death and maiming contributing health for our people? And why, pray tell, is a trade minister talking about preparing for war if he has been dutifully fulfilling his office to increase trade and likely peace with Russia for the betterment of his country? The traitor. This is BTW RLM 649. From the supporters of genocide and the direct financial supporters of the most moral and only democratic ally in the Middle East, CIA-linked firms bemoan Western Europe's surveillance push. Palantir and Signal have expressed concerns over European censorship efforts and undemocratic practices. Is this a comedy routine that we're watching here? Part of me wants to just bust out laughing. If it wasn't so serious. Two major U.S.-based tech firms, Palantir Technologies and Signal Foundation, have sounded the alarm over rapidly growing state surveillance and controversial digital control plans sprouting up across Europe. Well, 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 the pot calling the kettle black. Hey, President Trumpsterfire, you know anything about this? As you allow Palantir to create and control the surveillance state infrastructure in America? Anything? Anything at all? Tech giant Palantir, known for its long-standing relationship with the CIA, one of its top customers and first investors, will not make a bid for any contracts connected to digital ID, the firm's UK boss, Louise Mosley, has said. Quote, Palantir has long had a policy that we will help democratically elected governments implement the policies that they have been elected to deliver, and that does mean that often we are involved in the implementation of very controversial measures, he told Times Radio on Thursday. Digital IDs, not one that was tested at the last election. It wasn't in the manifesto. So we haven't had a clear, resounding public support at the ballot box for its implementation. So it isn't one for us. So Palantir calls out the surveillance state in Europe because it isn't using its own surveillance apparatus. Is that about right? It's dictating the surveillance state of the world, right? British Prime Minister Keir Starmer unveiled the ID plan late in September, touting it as a tool to help combat illegal employment while simplifying access to vital public services for the vast majority of people. Its critics, however, argued the scheme was a roadmap to blanket surveillance and digital control. Now, of these two to choose from, which one do you choose from that they offer us? Did you notice it says the vast majority will be served by this? There's some that escape, apparently, and they know that. Meanwhile, another U.S.-based tech giant, encrypted messenger Signal, threatened to leave the EU market for good should the bloc push through its chat control plan. Signal is known to have links to the CIA as well, albeit less opaque, having received funding from Radio Free Asia, a U.S. propaganda arm bankrolled by the agency. On Friday, the president of Signal Foundation, Meredith Whittaker, released a statement concerning media reports on what it called a catastrophic about-face on Germany's part, which is now expected to reverse its long-standing opposition to the plan. Quote, if we were given a choice between building a surveillance machine into Signal or leaving the market, we would leave the market, Whittaker says, condemning the plan as a mass scanning scheme under the guise of protecting children. So if Germany asks for it, it's no. When the CIA invested in it, that's quite fine. The chat control scheme, officially known as a Child Sexual Abuse Regulation, the CSAR, and deliberated in the EU since 2020, mandates messaging services like Signal, WhatsApp, and Telegram, and others to scan files of users' devices for highly illicit materials before encryption and sending. Because all y'all are presumed guilty of committing child sexual abuse until you prove you ain't. And from our way or the highway, Palantir to the Palisades, ChatGPT evidence cited as Palisades fire arrest. Feds say a blaze rekindled from New Year's fire allegedly set by Jonathan Rindernecht. After a 9-month probe into the deadly and highly destructive Palisades fire that tore through Pacific Palisades in Malibu, an arrest. The feds on Wednesday announced the arrest of 29-year-old Uber driver Jonathan Rindernecht, who prosecutors allege lit the original Lackman fire in the wee hours of a New Year's Day near the popular Skull Rock Trail after driving through the area in what his passengers say was an agitated state. That first fire, thought to be contained, in reality smoldered underground before reigniting during the high winds nearly a week later, exploding into the inferno that consumed 24,400 acres and more than 6,000 homes and buildings. It's thought that the fire was started using a lighter taken to vegetation or paper per the complaint. Other possibilities include fireworks, lightning, power lines, and cigarettes were all ruled out. Authorities allege that after setting the fire, Rindernecht reportedly tried to call 911, but had no cell service. The blaze was reported by a resident at 12:17 a.m. Rindernecht eventually got through to 911, and while on the line, allegedly asked ChatGPT, "Are you at fault if a fire is lit because of your cigarette?" U.S. Attorney Bill Essayly says that he returned to the trail to watch the fire burn. The complaint depicts his 911 calls and questions of ChatGPT as a means of preserving evidence of himself trying to assist in the suppression of the fire. He wanted to create evidence regarding a more innocent explanation for the cause of the fire. So the feds depicted what his calls and question meant and tainted a defense through conjecture. Do you get that? What actually has been unleashed on society? Used ChatGPT to catch him. Oh, they caught an alleged arson this time. Sounds great, right? But does anyone else see the problem with this? What if the next time they use an AI-prone AI and they accuse you of something based on what you innocently asked AI, that they decide how to depict the meaning? This is the exact danger and vulnerability I've been warning was going to happen, be happening. Someone looks in and decides to depict what they want it to mean that you've done wrong, and depicts through further conjecture that you did other things to cover up that wrong. Who wins that argument? You or the state? So be careful what you ask these corporate AI evidence vacuums. But how will you know? You incriminated yourself until it's too late. And to Oracle. Palantir. Over to Oracle. Ellison and other of Israel's surveillance and propaganda arm doing whatever it takes to stay in the intelligence business against you. Indonesia government restores TikTok's license after platform shares user data. In a country where the social media often outpaces law, TikTok's quiet concession speaks volumes. TikTok has handed over a broad collection of user data to Indonesian authorities, a move that cleared the way for the platform's operations to resume in the country after a brief suspension. The company acted under pressure from regulators following its failure to cooperate during a volatile stretch of anti-government demonstrations in late August. According to government officials, the data shared include analytics on traffic, behavior, and signs of potential outlaw online gambling. The request was triggered by a surge in live stream activity tied to the protests, which erupted after public anger over political perks collided with the fatal police killing of a motorcycle delivery driver. Currently owned by Chinese tech giant ByteDance, TikTok is deeply embedded in Indonesia's digital life with over 100 million users and a rapidly growing e-commerce arm. Authorities revoked its license last week after the platform did not supply information about users' activity during the period from August 25th to 30th. Police reported that some TikTok users live-streamed protest scenes and use the broadcast to solicit digital gifts or payments from viewers. On Monday, officials confirmed that TikTok submitted data showing the number of such live streams and how much money they generated. Alexander Sabar, a director general of the Ministry of Communications and Digital Affairs, said in a written message, "The summary data provided is aggregated data, not specific to a particular user, and therefore cannot be used to track and monitor individuals, including accounts broadcasting demonstrations." He said the ministry's primary interest was in an activity tied to online gambling and other prohibited uses of the platform. But it's aggregated. So how do they know? Unless they know. Technology companies around the world are often cautious when responding to government data requests. Firms such as Meta and Google typically weigh these demands against potential backlash from users and the risk of exposing proprietary systems. For TikTok, the situation carries added sensitivity. Concerns have persisted in the United States and elsewhere over the possibility that the Chinese government could compel ByteDance to share data for national security reasons. TikTok has consistently stated that it protects users' data and adheres to local laws. In a statement released Friday, the company said it's committed to ensuring that our platform provides a safe and responsible experience for the community in Indonesia. TikTok did not provide additional comment following the license restoration. A government letter had informed TikTok that it had failed to fulfill data sharing obligations under local law. The company responded on September 23rd, explaining the internal data protection policies limited what it could release. That explanation did not satisfy the government at the time, which moved forward with the suspension. However, officials made it clear that TikTok could resume full operations if it agreed to provide the required information. After further discussions, TikTok delivered a broader set of aggregate data that included information on live streams conducted during the unrest. This allowed the government to reinstate the company's license. But I thought they were after gambling. Alexander Sabar, the senior official from the ministry, confirmed the reinstatement, calling the original suspension a procedural action and noting that the issue had been resolved once TikTok complied. To serve you up. Oh, it's not just aggregated. Doesn't mean, well, how are they finding out about the thing they ostensibly say they're on to and wanted to know about, the online gambling? Why was the unrest more important as well? How did they identify those in online gambling if they don't know? Unless they know, as I just said. Along with the mandatory digital ID that almost 3 million people said they opposed, UK expands live facial recognition as first legal challenge targets Met police misidentification. Facial recognition quietly scales nationwide as the police double down on a tool still lacking clear legal ground. Police forces across England are preparing to expand their use of live facial recognition, LFR, surveillance, as the government moves forward with a national policy to guide deployments. And as I'm reading that, did you hear me hesitate a bit? I'm holding my tongue quite a bit here in these. I've been talking about all this, and here it's coming to fruition as we all stand there and chew our cud, I think. You got that about Palantir, right? Palantir's got the standard. Trump's already onshored it. It's in the United States. Now they're going to go after Europe. Palantir's an Israeli company. Police forces across England are preparing to expand their use of live facial recognition surveillance as the government moves forward with a national policy to guide deployments. Policing Minister Sarah Jones confirmed during the Labour Party conference that formal guidance is in a development to instruct officers on when and where the technology should be used. The funding from the Home Office has already been allocated to support LFR operations in 7 additional regions: Greater Manchester, West Yorkshire, Bedfordshire, Surrey, Sussex, Thames Valley, and Hampshire. Government officials have pointed to earlier deployments in London and Cardiff as successful, citing arrests. Reflecting on those results, Jones stated, quote, "What we've seen in Croydon is that if it works, we just need to make sure it's clear what the technology is going to be useful for going forward. If we're going to use it more, if we do want to roll it out across the country, what are the parameters? Live facial recognition is a really good tool that has led to arrests that wouldn't have come otherwise, and it's very, very valuable. It just works, folks. getting past the government intrusion and presuming everyone guilty until AI face recognition says you aren't, of those arrests, how many were correct? The software links live camera feeds to a watch list of people wanted by police. When someone passes a camera, facial measurements are analyzed and compared against a database. If a match is found, police officers are alerted to intervene. However, the use of LFR has expanded sharply. In London, the number of people included on watch lists has more than doubled between 2020 and 2025. The volume of facial scans during the deployments has also grown, with single-day scans now reaching into the tens of thousands. The Metropolitan Police insists it has safeguards in place and maintains the data from individuals not on watch list is deleted immediately. A Met Police spokesman said the Met is committed to making London safer, using data and technology to locate offenders that pose the greatest risk to our communities. Now on a social media platform near you. The increase of LFR is driven by its proven impact and success, with more than 1,000 dangerous offenders off London streets, including those wanted for rape and abuse, domestic abuse. We have strong safeguards in place when operating LFR. For example, if a member of the public walks past an LFR camera and is not wanted by the police, the biometrics are immediately and impermanently deleted. Well, until they're not. Maybe they need to send a receipt and evidence of the deletion to those they identify that they are not wanted. There is currently no specific law governing LFR. Police forces operate under internal policies, and oversight remains limited. But the state is always right, even when it's wrong. Despite this, both the Metropolitan and South Wales Police have signaled plans to install permanent systems in public areas. A community volunteer wrongly flagged by the technology is now taking the Met to court. Sean Thompson, 39, was stopped outside London Bridge Station after cameras misidentified him as a suspect. Returning from a shift with Street Fathers, a group focused on youth mentorship and knife crime prevention, Thompson was detained for nearly 30 minutes, threatened with arrest, and asked for fingerprints despite showing multiple forms of ID. I was coming home from a street patrol in Croydon when I was pulled out of the street at London Bridge due to a facial recognition, he said. They were telling me I was a wanted man, even though they knew the computer had got it wrong. AI error prone, yet the presumption of right is with the king. The High Court has granted permission for his lawsuit to proceed, marking the first legal challenge of its kind against LFR in the UK. The king's peonage were granted permission. The case, supported by Big Brother Watch, will be heard in January 2026. So they all know it was a misidentification through a system that is known to be erroneous. Despite it just works, the victim still needs to go to the King's Court to beg, pray for justice. Also, the Crown Prison. UK once again demands backdoor to Apple's encrypted cloud storage. The new order in September narrowed access requests down to data of UK citizens. Is everyone listening to this? I mean, everyone listening. The UK government has issued a new order to Apple to create a backdoor into its cloud storage service, this time targeting only British users' data, despite US claims that Britain had abandoned all attempts to break the tech giant's encryption. The UK Home Office demanded in early September that Apple create a means to allow officials access to encrypted cloud backups, but stipulated that the order applied only to British citizens' data, according to people briefed on the matter. So apparently they have access to everything else, don't they? Now let me offer, as I, before I forget, those are encrypted into the cloud by the service of the cloud. Why don't we all start to learn how to encrypt going to the cloud? And so when it gets deposited in the cloud, it's already encrypted. And those folks up there don't have a clue how to unencrypt it unless they have maybe the quantum coming. And I think that I have to look into that a bit more. That was one way to possibly get around some of this. You just make sure what you send up is encrypted. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not comfortable with it, but if that's where we're going, we better get comfortable with it. It won't matter at some point. A previous technical capability notice, TCN, issued in January sought global access to encrypted user data. That move sparked a diplomatic clash between the UK and US governments and threatened to derail the two nations' efforts to secure a trade agreement. In February, Apple withdrew its most secure cloud storage service, iCloud Advanced Data Protection, from the UK. Apple is still unable to offer advanced data protection in the United Kingdom to users, Apple said on Wednesday. We are gravely disappointed that the protections provided by ADP are not available to our customers in the UK given the continuing rise of data breaches and other threats to customer privacy. Data breaches. What, by the government? Hacking them? It added, as we have said many times before, we have never built a backdoor or master key to any of our products or services, and we never will. The Home Office said, quote, we do not comment on operational matters, including, for example, confirming or denying the existence of any such notices. We will always take all actions necessary at the domestic level to keep UK citizens safe, like they did with the jab. Safe and effective. Isn't that right? They can be trusted. Both Apple and the Home Office are restricted from discussing TCNs by law. Privacy campaigners say that any attempt to force Apple to compromise the security of its systems could put at risk global customers' private information, including passwords, message history, and health data, which can all be stored in iCloud. Caroline Wilson Palau, legal director of the campaign group Privacy International, said the new order might be, quote, just as big a threat to worldwide security and privacy as the old one. She said, quote, if Apple breaks end-to-end encryption for the UK, it breaks it for everyone. The resulting vulnerability can be exploited by hostile states, criminals, and other bad actors the world over. Well, the UK's a state, isn't it? Maybe I was onto something about the vulnerabilities that Apple sees. Apple made a complaint to the Investigatory Powers Tribunal over the original demand, backed by a parallel legal challenge from Privacy International Liberty, another campaign group. That cause was due to be heard over early next year, but the new order may restart the legal process. TCNs are issued under the UK's Investigatory Powers Act, which the government maintains is needed by law enforcement to investigate terrorism and child sexual abuse, because all y'all are presumed terrorists, child sexual abusing immigrants. Why is everyone okay with that? And the felony crimes the Crown is committing in doing so. And the Swiss are following the herd, if ever so incrementally, the tiptoe to tyranny. Swiss voters back electronic identity cards in close vote. Pollsters confounded by 50.4% support for EIDs after forecasting stronger backing for yes vote. Swiss voters have backed plans for electronic identity cards by a wafer-thin margin in the second nationwide vote on the issue. See, they just keep pounding you till you give in. In a referendum on Sunday, 50.4% of the voters supported an electronic ID card, with 49.6% were against. confounding pollsters who had forecast stronger support for the yes vote. Turnout was 49.5% higher than expected. The narrow win will come as a relief to Switzerland's main political parties, which had mostly supported plans for the EID. Another uniparty in Switzerland. Well, who would have thunk it, folks? Both houses of the Swiss parliament had backed the measure, with large majorities in the government had recommended a yes vote. But Starmer, over 3 million people saying no, he said, no, too bad, you're getting an ID. But voters rejected an earlier version of the EID in 2021, coincidentally to the great Covey swindle, largely over objections to the role of private companies in the system. In response to these concerns, the Swiss state will now provide the EID, which will be optional and free of charge. Optional and free until when? The referendum came soon after the UK government announced plans for a digital ID card, which could sit in the digital wallets of smartphones using a state-of-the-art encryption that they're trying to deny to Apple. The Swiss authorities said the EID would help people prove their identity online, making it easier to access government services or prove their age, for example, when buying alcohol. The EID, which is linked to a smartphone, can also be used in bricks and mortar businesses, for instance, to open a bank account or prove age in bars and clubs. Is that really a problem? To ensure security, the EID is linked to a single smartphone. Users will have to get a new EID if they change their device. Swiss people could still choose to use a physical ID card, for now, which has been in place for decades. An ID card containing biometric data, fingerprints, will be available from the end of next year. Now, how is it that they had all this ready to go before it got voted in, and by such a wafer-thin margin? Critics of the EID scheme raised data protection concerns and said it opened the door to mass surveillance. They also fear the voluntary scheme will become mandatory and disadvantage people without smartphones. Just tell them you don't have one, folks. I told you it's all going to go through this so-called smartphone. Not too intelligent, but it's smart. S-M-A-R-T, phone. That's sustainable development. The referendum was called after a coalition of right-wing and data privacy parties collected more than 50,000 signatures against EID cards, triggering the vote. But by a wafer-thin advantage, do they get it? The government argued digital ID would boost the Swiss economy by bringing the non-EU country in line with its neighbors, because sustainable development and climate change is not about the weather. It's about Agenda 2030. For those of you that want a quick read, it'll be take you a little while, and you'll notice it's about debt slavery. They call that prosperity. You're prospering to support Gaia. Now, you're going to find that debt slavery way back in the bottom of that document, about three-quarters, two-thirds of the way in. I've read it in the broadcast. It's so important to understand these are set up and planned. So it's about universal economy. As I've learned you behind the woodshed, it's not about your rights, because you don't have any rights, or at least any you'll protect or defend against. By the end of 2026, all EU citizens should be able to have a digital wallet allowing people to store ID cards, driver's licenses, and university diplomas in one place online so they can prove identity and have easier access to government and private business services. So now they've wrapped up the private businesses into this. Remember, digital wallet was blockchain. You see what's attached to it now. But EU citizens? I thought the European Union was an economic union. The countries are member too for commerce. What does that have to do with European citizens? What happened to the people in a European country? Is the EU now a big company store? The digital wallet is voluntary now, based on open source code, and is being tested by 550 public authorities and private companies in the EU, Norway, Iceland, and Ukraine. Well, who cares that it's open source? That doesn't change the fact that you live in an open air prison. Once you get tied in, you're locked in. You're blockchained to it. It can be as open source as it. You can check it out all you want. They want your buy-in. They want you to agree. They're going to take down what you oppose, and they're going to so-called fix it, at least temporarily. Some countries have already taken this path for more than two decades. Estonians have had EID cards, which are used to vote, digitally sign documents, access public services, and shop online. Like, we can't do that now with a debit card. In Ukraine, 14 million people are said to use the DIA app and website, which allows people to store digital documents, includes passports and ID cards, and access state service, such as paying traffic fines and updating driver's licenses. Those that take the mark, folks. And tell me that they don't know where the resistance will come from. Australia's e-safety commissioner holds 2,600 plus records tracking Christian media outlet. Like, why? The regulators refused to hand over data highlights how at a surveillance system built to monitor online speech now doubles as a barrier to public accountability. Listen to this little trick they're pulling now. Australia's online safety regulator is refusing to process a freedom of information request that would expose how it has tracked the activity of prominent Christian media outlet and its leaders, citing excessive workload as the reason for denial. The Office of eSafety Commissioner Julie Inman Grant has confirmed it is holding more than 2,600 records connected to the Daily Declaration, its founding body, the Canberra Declaration, and three of its editorial figures, Warwick Marsh, Samuel Hartwick, and Kurt Malberg. Despite admitting the existence of these records, the agency says reviewing them would take more than 100 hours and would therefore unreasonably impact its operations. In a formal response dated 29 September, the regulator explained that it had identified thousands of documents referencing the group and its members. Processing a request of this size would substantially impact eSafety's operations, the notice read. The documents include media monitoring reports automatically generated whenever the Daily Declaration or its editors have posted online about the regulator or been tagged in relevant conversations. Don't think it's them over there. This is you, wherever you are. And wherever you be, what they can do this too. Every mention gets captured by automated tracking tools, creating a growing pile of files that the agency now claims is too large to review. After filtering for duplicates, around 650 documents were considered potentially relevant. Yet the agency still refused, estimating that sorting and redacting them would consume over 100 hours. That figure triggers what the law defines as a practical refusal, giving agencies a legal cover to reject the request altogether. As I'm reading through this, I just wonder if you get yourself in a little bit of trouble, and they want to take you to court, or get yourself to go to court, and then have them have to develop that as evidence in discovery. But just for thoughts, don't know how their court system works. Government departments are allowed to deny FOI requests if they consider them too broad or resource heavy. And this is generally what goes on. They're not doing something particular here, but to say you gather so much information, you gather so much it takes too much to give it back, that's a new one. In this case, the regulator's own mass monitoring appears to be the reason it can now avoid public scrutiny. A system that routinely generates digital records of online commentary is then used to block access to those very records, effectively protecting the agency from oversight. Malberg, senior editor at the Daily Declaration, called out the move, saying, quote, the very mechanism designed to protect Australians ends up shielding the government from scrutiny, close quote. The Commissioner's Office has given a deadline of 13 October for the request to be narrowed. If that does not happen, it will be treated as withdrawn, and none of the 2,600 documents will be released. Suggested limitations include trimming the date range, excluding auto-generated reports, or focusing only on specific individuals. But when your object is to see the auto-generated reports, to see what their relative to and meritful of, that is a problem, isn't it? They're asking you not to ask for those things that causes the problem. Although the Daily Declaration has said it will resubmit the FOI request with more restricted scope, the case raises broader concerns. The regulator has amassed a significant database tracking Christian organizations and individuals who speak on topics such as faith, freedom, and family, by leaning on its own volume of monitoring data to block transparency, the agency sets a dangerous precedent. While the public is told this is a matter of efficiency, the reality is that routine surveillance of dissenting voices is being shielded from exposure. The more the agency monitors, the easier it becomes to deny public access. Sounds like the best resistance would be where they can't find you, but you find yourselves. And we're certainly not getting the type of donations we need at RLM to do that for people either. I thought there would have been a lot more interest in this sort of thing as people saw the beast approaching. Was I wrong? Is most everyone going to surrender? If you're interested in helping to develop a system that isn't so easily bent, easily trackable, find the donation button, please, and give what you can. Or contact Sound Minds if you would like to present content to help people. Got a lot of room. A place on the schedule for you. We need a little bit more, a lot more help. It's taking a whole lot more. This is a much more comprehensive problem. It's not really more than in a way we thought, but it's becoming so exacting, and the pressure now is on that we can't get it wrong when we roll it out. And I'm told there are some very close. We're going to have some new changes coming onto the network with a new look and stuff. So that's pretty cool. We've been working slowly as we get more information and expertise in the hardware, trying to supply everything ourselves, which is partly the answer for every one of us, supply everything ourselves. In other words, encrypt your own stuff when you send it up. Don't let someone else get away with doing it for you. You do your own thing, you're going to have much more control of it, and there's not a lot that they can do to track you down if you take some precautions. So, if you would, again, we're still working hard, but not getting the support, the financial support I think we need to try to help everyone to not be where the government expects you to be in the digital realm. So one interesting story here, I thought our artistic expressions was protected in this country. Apparently, when you put a name tag on something, that maybe it's not. We'll see here. Man accused of terror threats for his grisly Halloween decor. Fake corpses labeled with local officials' titles spark Kentucky police probe into Stephen Markham. Just the titles of an office, folks, was enough to do this. It reminds me of a thing I did one time, a long time back, at a garden space raised bed. I put the mound in the shape of a body, put some old boots at the end. I can't remember, it was something else I did. And one day I had a cop show up, want to know about the dead body in my garden. I didn't put a tag on it, though, so maybe that was what saved me. Anyway, it was pretty comical, I thought. Kentucky man's Halloween display has landed him in legal trouble after authorities allege it crossed the line from seasonal fright to criminal threat. Stephen Markham, 58, of Stanton, was arrested Saturday on facing charges of making terroristic threats and intimidating a witness after police discovered a staged scene in his yard featuring five fake bodies in trash bags, each tagged with the title of a local official. According to the Kentucky State Police, the grisly props were visible from the street and included one figure labeled District Judge, suspended with a rope around its neck. The other labels read Mayor, SIS, CA, and Zoning Manager. Markham allegedly told the cops, quote, he did not want to speak with us about the Halloween decorations he had in his yard, per an arrest citation. The display comes amid an ongoing dispute between Markham and the city over zoning violations at his home, which reportedly lacks proper water, sewer, electricity services. God, heck, that's how I live. And I can't get a court to turn them on. How do you like that? You know, I'm living in the wrong spot, if I could move. Powell County Judge Executive Eddie Barnes, who's known Markham for decades, tells NBC he doesn't consider Markham dangerous, but noted the man's living conditions had prompted neighbors and neighborhood complaints, with some alleging Markham has resorted to unsanitary waste disposal methods. Barnes says Markham might be better off in jail, given the circumstances. As the case moved to arraignment on Tuesday, proceedings took an unusual turn. The judge, who reportedly is the same district judge referenced on the Halloween scene, recused himself due to his involvement in Markham's zoning case. It remains unclear whether Markham, who was booked into Powell County's detention center, has legal representation. He's being held on $5,000 bond. The WKYT also reports that the Halloween decor was confiscated. So theft. Right there in that city. Or just putting a tag on a bag. They bag you and they tag you, but you can't do it reverse. It's pretty interesting. Anyway, this guy in his zoning, I don't know. You get to unsanitary things, that's not good. Why he doesn't have these essential services, I found out they're not supposed to be disconnected like that. That he should probably have the same law. I can't speak to all that, but when you have zoning violations that are not sanitation, which is a state police power to correct, I'm not sure why people don't resort to their patent, the evidence of the disposal of their land, at least to most code enforcement obligations, and press the government on how it's not committing felony extortion and coercion in interfering with a congressional grant or a state, even a state grant. Some people have state grants of disposal of their land. That would be a breach to that, the grantor's grant and of that land and the purpose for which it was granted. These zoning issues are very dangerous and they do get you in trouble, and then they start beating on you as you see going on, and they frustrate people with this, and you have to have a little bit different action. I was interested that you can't put a tag of an official on a bag as a Halloween decor, and that didn't violate the First Amendment, which apparently doesn't exist in this country anymore on this. I'm going to be interested to see how this case goes on. Again, hard to say the character of people and what they're going on. The article here saying there was a friend says he's not dangerous. You can almost think this guy's a joker trying to do the best in a bad situation, but he is not dangerous. I know quite a few people that would pull this off just to snicker, just to have a good laugh. So, to hold out and see what's going to happen with this one, just to see how the state contorts it to get him so they don't have to get him for an expression, freedom of expression problem. And I'm hoping that he comes in and says, and that's part of his defense. That's what he's been doing. This has been BTW RLM 649. And I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.